Well, imagine you're sending an airplane into the air. It can get up off the runway and it can go straight, but it can't navigate. There's no navigation system. It can't turn. There's no rudders. There's no flaps. There's no anything. Imagine where that plane's going to be in short time. And imagine a child that is left unguided without any navigation system, and you send him out into the world, and you've launched him, so to speak, into the world, but you haven't provided him with the proper navigation. What's going to happen to that child? That's just what we're facing here as parents. This is what we're facing here as really family, in that there's something there that we want to prepare our children for, and it's something a bit daunting. It's something that is terribly important to be ready for, and that is called life outside of the family, okay? And that those children need that. And there's a paradoxical behavior that you see in kids. They're constantly testing the borders, you know, as if they wanted to get free, but they thrive on knowing that there are borders and limits and boundaries, and they need to know that there is a way in which to go, a way in which to navigate through life. And you're the parent. You're the one to provide that. Children need their parents because they're not equipped to mature to raise themselves. They need structure. They need stability. They need standards. They need boundaries. They also need acceptance regardless of their mistakes. They also need denial, not denying the children themselves, but they need denial of some of the things that they ask for. They don't need everything they ask for, and they don't need everything that you get as parents. They need to be loved. We're not talking about just affection and attention, but that too. Really what we're talking about is acting in their best interest, even when it's hard to do so, even when it hurts to do so. And they need to be taught how to be obedient, because if your child does not obey your authority, then they are unprepared to be good citizens and faithful Christians as you launch them into the world on their own. Obedience in the home means that you, parents, provide an expected standard of behavior for your children, and they are held accountable to this. You're not doing this because you're a bunch of tyrannical ogres, okay? You're doing this because law and order are absolutely necessary for the organization and leadership of people. And that's what you have there when you have a family, a bunch of intelligent people that need to be organized and led. And law and order is essential to that organization and leadership. John 14, verse 15, Jesus says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." Many children want their, or many parents, I should say, want their children to love them, and then they try to win their children's love and affection with toys and gifts and leniencies and permissions and all that. Their love for you requires that they honor and respect and obey you, and you need to act that part as one who does need to be honored and respected and obeyed. And those children who refuse to obey must be disciplined, not because you're irritated, not because you're simply disappointed, but a higher objective in mind. You know that if they do not obey you or learn to obey you, they will lead to the detriment of society, the church, and their own souls. We're told in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6 through 13, God our Father disciplines his children. In fact, that's what makes us, or one of the defining characteristics of his children, is that we are disciplined. He says in the passage there, if we're not disciplined by God, then we're illegitimate children. We don't really belong to him at all. So there's something to consider there. He expects us to do the same with our children. In fact, in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1, it says that we are to be imitators of God as beloved children. So here we are, children of God, now adults, and learning how to imitate God's fatherhood in regard to our own families. Discipline is not only punishment. It should never be looked at that way. It is instruction. It is guidance. It is correction. It is reinforcement. It is redirection. Kind of like if you've got a rose bush, you've got to prune it to get it to produce, well, first of all, a shapely plant, but more importantly, really good roses. Or if you've got a bonsai plant, a lot of you have seen those Japanese bonsai plants. Those things are carefully cultivated, carefully shaped to produce a certain end result there. And that's exactly what you're doing with your children. There's some pruning involved. There's some shaping involved. And yeah, that may imply some pain involved if one way or the other, but it's necessary for the end result. And it takes time and effort and consistency to do that proactively and reactively, but it is worth it, especially when you see your children growing up into fine young adults and speaking and acting in the same way as what you taught them in the Lord. And that is a very rewarding experience in itself. Well, let's talk about obedience just for a moment here. Some people confuse obedience with flawless behavior, and that is not necessary at all. True, obedience does seek flawless behavior, but realistically does not expect it. I know that might sound weird to say that, but if you think of a passage like Matthew 5:48, there in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says to the people listening to him, he says, "You are to be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." Well, I don't think any of those people were perfect. Even though God is. And I don't think any of us are perfect, even though God remains perfect. Well, so what is he saying? He says, here's an ideal standard. This is something you should be striving for, something you should be trying to attain to. But he also knows that that is not going to be met necessarily. God knows that we will disobey him. And parents should know that their children will disobey them. We're not giving permission here. We're just stating facts, okay? Yet in both cases, responsibility is taught, and it is expected, and accountability is enforced. Basically, the parent says the same thing God does. I told you what to do. You did not listen to what I said. Now you're going to have to pay the cost of not listening to me, okay? And this is what God does for us. This is what parents do for their kids. Overall, obedience is all about conforming to a known and expected standard of conduct as a necessary means of training children to respect and to abide by an authority higher than themselves. This is true with regard to children, to parents. It is true in civil law. It is true in the military. It is true in the gospel. There is an authority that is higher than ourselves. We need to be trained to respect and abide by, to obey that authority in any of those contexts, the gospel being the most important of those contexts. Not every act of discipline has to be met with some act of punishment. Some actions are called to attention and they are reproved, and then the parent and children move on. But when disobedience is repeated with no attempt to improve or for grievous violations, then something has to be done. I'll talk more about that in a few moments, but just want to state that up front, that we don't think that you've got to do something specific for every single infraction there. By insisting on obedience, we're not stifling creativity. We're not injuring the free will of our kids. We're not holding them back. I know Larissa likes to when Honey and I ask her to do something, she stomps and says, "You're ruining my life." And what's really fun is that now Honey and I do that with her when she asks us to do something. So it's a lot of fun when it all gets turned around. But you're really not ruining anybody's life here, okay? Quite the opposite. You're providing direction for your children to go. Think about that, as opposed to what you see in Judges 21:25, where it says, "In those days there was no king. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." In other words, there was no central authority, and everyone was just kind of doing what they thought was right there. That is not good. Kids are not self-governed. They need those who are older and wiser and more experienced to show that right way and to lead them by example. I've seen so many times, in fact, one particular Starbucks I go to, there's a family that comes in there, and they've got a little child and grandchild, because the whole family's there, and this kid just runs back and forth, and in the way, he's tipping things over and getting into people's stuff and messing with people and all this other, the whole restaurant has to sit here and endure this irresponsible child because of the irresponsible parents. And I want you to just think about that. The family, though, they laugh about that. They chase after the child. They clean up after the child. This is completely backwards. And yet many parents do this. They let their children run free, and they pick up their mess afterward, and they laugh, and they think it's cute. But the fact is, you're doing the exact opposite that you should be doing. Instead of leading the child, you're running after him or her. And I want you to think about that, how that is symptomatic of or symbolic of the exact opposite of where you should be. That child should be able to stand by you. And when you click your fingers, they grab your hand. This is what we did with our kids. By the way, it works. It's very effective. to this day, we can click our fingers and get our kids' attention, okay? Some of you probably just sat up straight, just me doing that. So it's very effective, and you can do that, and children can be trained. I know some take longer to train, and I realize that, but they can be trained for good. Children who are not trained, who are not taught to listen or mind or obey when they are young, will likely continue all of that when they are older. As I said in a recent lesson, if you can't control a 5-year-old, how in the world are you going to control a 15-year-old? And if you can't control a toddler, then how in the world are you going to control a teenager? So it starts when they're young. That's why we want to give these lessons, when we have young families here. We want young families. We love to have the kids here. We really do. But they've got to have some guidance, and you've got to know that you're the source of that guidance up front. Teaching children is a route to good behavior. It's a route to finding favor with God. Romans 2, verse 6 through 8, Paul says that God will render to each person according to his deeds. To those who by perseverance and doing good seek for glory and honor and immortality, they will get eternal life. But those who are selfishly ambitious don't obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, wrath, and indignation will be theirs. Think of what God is saying. Think of what Paul is saying. Honor and obedience is the path of joy and blessing and life. But disobedience is the path to sorrow and loss and punishment. And so children, your children, need to understand that and be taught which path to take and how to take it. And of course, there you are as parents, leading by example. As kids mature, the reason for their behavior does change. They often mimic what they observe in their parents. What I mean by this is when kids are young, they might tell you, well, I do this because mommy and daddy said, thus or so. This is the rules that mom and dad laid down. When they get older, however, if they're taught well, this is what they'll start saying. I do this or don't do that because of what God says. There's a shift there in allegiance from the parents to God. I'm not saying that they don't have God in mind even when they're young, or that parents aren't in mind even when they get older. What I'm saying is that ultimately they recognize that they are responsible no longer just to their parents. They are ultimately responsible to God himself, and that's a good thing. That's exactly where you want them. Parents who train their children that if you don't get caught doing something, that it isn't wrong. We're talking about having that moral compass here. Well, that creates a stumbling block and a serious crime. I had given a story years ago, I'll give it again, about a father hunting with his son, and each one of them has a hunting tag, which means they can only get one animal apiece, and that's it. And the son gets his animal right away, and the dad puts his tag on the son's animal so that the son can go on to hunt. And another parent hearing about this writes back, oh, you did the daddy thing as a compliment. No, actually, you did the criminal thing as someone who broke the law. And yet you teach your children that breaking the law is okay, or that when people aren't looking or aren't around to enforce that law, then that's okay. And I will say to the dads in particular, if you're doing something immoral or illegal or unethical in front of your children and then justifying it on your own terms, you can be sure that those children are going to do the exact same thing later on, probably when you're not looking or when you're not aware of it. Because you taught them that. You taught them to do that. And that's not a good thing. That's a stumbling block. Parents play a crucial role in forming their children's attitude toward respect for law and authority and God himself. Kind of the James 3:1 in principle, where he says, let not many of you be teachers, for they incur a stricter judgment. Well, maybe a lot of people should read that with parents instead of teachers. Let not many of you be parents, because you do incur a stricter judgment. It's true. Let's talk about that word discipline, which is a result of disobedience in some cases. The word itself actually is derived from the same word from which we get disciple or pupil or student. It involves teaching and training, correction, and yes, if necessary, punishment. And in doing so, and thinking about it that way, think of Jesus, the master, with his disciples, his pupils, his students. He taught them new knowledge. He taught them expected behavior. He praised them when they did well. He rebuked and corrected them, sometimes severely when they did not, when they strayed from that teaching. But in all respects, Jesus was clearly the master and the leader of his disciples.
And this is exactly what parents should be doing or should take into account. First of all, train them well. Secondly, praise them when they do well. Not every single time for every single thing, but make it clear that you're happy with them, that you find favor with them overall. And thirdly, correct them, even punish if necessary, when they refuse to honor that training. When you do that, you're doing exactly what Jesus did with his own disciples. You're discipling those children. You're leading them. And that's what discipline is all about, is really turning those people that you're governing there into disciples of yours, but really guiding them into a greater discipleship, and that is discipleship to God himself. It is interesting what Jesus says here in Matthew 10, verse 24 and 25. He says, a disciple, student, is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. It is enough for the disciple they become like his teacher and the slave like his master. The point we're making here is that the child is not above the parent and doesn't equate to the parent. If anything, the child ought to follow the parents, not the other way around. They are to become like you. They are never to take your place, however. Keep that in mind when we get to our lesson later on honoring your father and mother. You're never to take their place. When correcting, you have to define the incorrect behavior, but also redirect to the correct behavior. It's kind of a not that, but this approach. Imagine a father, for example, teaching, say, an 8-year-old son to whittle a stick, and the son does something wrong in the process there, and the father just looks at him exasperated and says, "What are you doing?" But doesn't define what he did. And the kid stops, he's shocked and like, "Oh, what happened?" You know, but there's no explanation giving, no correction. Or the father doing perhaps even worse in some cases, just taking the whole thing away. "Give it to me. Let me do that." And then he does it himself and just really takes that responsibility away from the child altogether. Instead of leading the child through, this is how you do it correctly. Even by example, let me show you how to do this, and then hand it to the son and letting him do that. There's that nurturing. There's that not this, but that. Not that, but this approach, rather. We see that actually in Ephesians 4. I'm not going to take time to go through it too long, but Ephesians 4, verse 17 through 32, Paul goes through a series of not that, but this approach. He says, you were like that. You used to lie. You used to steal. You used to do all these things, but you need to stop that and do this other thing instead. He defines incorrect behavior and provides the correct behavior instead. You go through that whole passage, and that's what you'll see. This is also proactive and preventative. In other words, kind of like saying, don't even think about doing that other thing. It's not something that you have done wrong, but don't even think about going there. Do this instead. There's that proaction at work. A discipline may require you to say no. Sometimes no is the best answer to give. You cannot teach children to follow Christ if you never teach them the meaning of no. And I've stated that several times in our series, and I will continue to make that point. Children need to be taught that no means no. It does not mean ask again, ask mom, irritate me to no end, whine, throw a tantrum, or anything else. No means no. And I understand that kids may not get that up front, but they can be taught that pretty quickly, okay? And you're the one to enforce that teaching. You will not injure or emotionally scar your child by denying him some selfish or unnecessary requests. You, as a parent, ought to know which are the selfish and unnecessary requests to begin with. You're supposed to know the difference between those. You are not a genie who grants any and every request to your child because you want that child just to adore you and everything else. You are a parent, and therefore you are the one in the decision-making process who decides which requests are going to be granted or not. I realize this changes over time with age. We're talking generally here, but it does need to be established. Even when kids are teenagers, just because they think they're wiser and older and more responsible and actually are, that doesn't mean that the parent's role is abdicated there and the teenagers take over. It doesn't mean that. Even when they're teenagers, if they're living under your roof, then you have the final say. That's just how it has to be. If you want law and order in your house, You are not a genie, as I said, just granting the requests as they come up. Young parents, I hear this all the time from young parents. I feel like I'm constantly saying no, right? Any young parents feel that way? I did when I was a young parent. It's like, no, 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 no. You know, you feel like you're just doing that all the time. Actually, that is natural and necessary at first because rules and boundaries do need to be established. You should think about this. I looked it up. How many times God said, you shall not in the Old Testament, in the law itself, over 200 times. In the New Testament, very few times. What happened there? Well, these boundaries were given there. The foundation had been laid. It's clear now that God is the one in authority. So we don't have to keep hammering that. We don't have to keep doing that over and over. That's been established. Same with your kids. Once you establish that I am in authority, you are not. I am the parent. You're the child. Let's understand that. Both of us be on the same page. All right, now we can move forward. Now I don't have to keep saying no, 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 no. Okay? And the child will learn much better. If possible, provide a yes when you can. Yes, this is right. This is right with me. This is right with God. This makes me happy. However, let me say that it is not necessary to do that for every single occasion. You don't have to go searching for a yes for your child when in fact they do something wrong. You simply say, no, that's enough of that. No. And that's the end of it there, okay? In other words, your word should be enough to stand alone. God does both, by the way. Sometimes he says no and then provides a yes, and sometimes he just simply says no. So you're not doing anything different in that respect than God does, and you should know that. Discipline is not something you do to the child as much as you do it for the child. We're told in Ephesians 6:4 that fathers are to bring their children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That doesn't mean lecture and spank them. It means direct them, teach them, train them, guide them, give them that navigation that we talked about. Don't just send them out down the runway into life without any kind of direction, directional equipment, if you will. Above all, of course, show them love, which means act in their best interest. I realize this is not always easy. Of course it's not always easy. Sometimes we call it tough love, but you realize that even tough love is still love. It's, as long as it's administered properly. For example, to teach a child to sit quietly during services and be more attentive as they get older, that is not harmful. It is not unloving. What you're doing is you're setting a very proper standard and precedent for that child. You're teaching them to respect God and respect the people who are around them. If that child does not learn or practice all that in this very limited controlled setting as we have right here, then how in the world do you think they're going to behave when you set them loose into the world? How do you think they're going to behave? If you haven't taught them how to control themselves here, then you can just imagine where that's going to go later. If they don't behave in your presence when you're sitting next to them, then how in the world are they going to behave when you're not around? And if they don't respect others when you're here and teaching them to respect others, if they just don't want to and you do nothing about that, what do you think is going to happen later when they confront a policeman or confront a drill sergeant or, you know, a platoon leader or confront a higher authority than them? What do you think they're going to do? I was reading an article written by a well-known writer who has done a lot of research on children. He says he was on a plane watching a child being taught how to be shot. I know that sounds pretty alarming to hear that. So I read the article, and the flight attendant was coming by, and the kid was watching something on his iPad, and the flight attendant says, you got to turn that off. The kid just ignored it. Parents sitting there just ignored him, didn't care at all. And so the flight attendant comes back by again and says, you got to turn that off. Just ignored the flight attendant. Parent didn't do anything. Finally came back and said, look, you have to turn that off, basically, or you're going to get off the plane. Finally turned it off. Flight attendant goes away, opens it back up, turns it on. Mom didn't say anything. And the writer says, there's a kid being taught how to be shot. Because later on, when a cop says to do something and he doesn't do it, or a military leader there tells him to do something and he doesn't do it, there's going to be far serious consequences than he can imagine. So what are you teaching your children? You might think that, oh, I'm just tired and I'm, you know, busy and distracted, and so, you know, maybe another time. What are you teaching your children? What is God teaching us? Some parents try to placate their children as opposed to laying down expectations and then enforcing them. And so they bring iPads and that sort of thing to restaurants and coffee shops and concerts. We actually saw that happening. I had a kid watching a movie in front of a concert of Larissa's here one time at Kentwood High School. It's the most irritating thing. We've got a darkened auditorium and I'm trying to listen to everything. The kid's watching a movie right in front of me. Sound and everything. And you're just thinking, how disrespectful. Well, the parent was sitting right next to the child and didn't do a thing about it. So this obviously happens a lot. And this is trained behavior. Imagine when that kid gets out, you know, in any other context, he's going to do the same thing. But that happens not just in concerts, but in family outings and even in church. Keep the kids sedated. Keep them distracted. Sometimes the reason why parents do that is because they themselves are already sedated and distracted. They themselves are already caught up in this technology fascination that we have right now. The fact is, you are not a cruise director. You are not the entertainment coordinator for your children. It is neither wise nor your job to provide an electronic pacifier for your children every time they are restless or you just don't want to deal with them. It's just not appropriate to respond that way. Believe it or not, this might sound shocking, but children do not have to be entertained every waking moment. And if you train your children that they do, then what happens when they grow up and they're asked to sit down and listen to the Word of God and be responsible? They're going to gravitate to entertainment, not education. Guess what we're facing right now in the religious world? Lots of churches that are providing entertainment rather than education, because we have a whole generation or two that has been saturated with entertainment all their lives and they don't think anything about education. They just want to be distracted and entertained. And that makes it a hard sell then for the church of the future. But imagine if you condition them differently, to put a price on education, to value that, to say that, you know, there's a time for entertainment. There's nothing wrong with that in itself. But there's something far more valuable in education and paying attention and really obeying the law of the house, if you will. Sometimes children push too many buttons and irritate their parents too much, exceed all limits, and then the parents explode. I think we've all probably seen that, been there on one side or the other. We understand what we're talking about here. Here, let me just say it this way. You cannot wait until a meltdown occurs, either your child's or yours, to administer proper discipline. Otherwise, you lose control and lose the child's respect and trust in you. It is not in the children's interest or yours to do so. God gets angry. There's no problem with getting angry in itself. God gets angry, but he never, ever loses his temper. So there's something valuable for us parents to remember that. Look at James chapter 1 with me. James chapter 1, there in verse 19 and 20. James says, it's something you're familiar with, starting halfway in that verse there. He says, "But everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God." Well, this anger of man, what is that? Well, that's that self-serving anger where it's all about me. I'm angry, so I am going to vent my anger on you, the child here. It doesn't mean, however, that the child doesn't need to see you angry. I think it's very healthy, honestly, that the children do see you angry over the right things for the right reason. Righteous anger. They need to see that you have passion and that you do have boundaries, and those boundaries can be violated, and then your response to that. It is healthy. It reinforces their own boundaries. Okay, it's good to get angry for the right things for the right reasons. It's not good just to blow up. By the way, I think this is a really important point here, that verbal or emotional abuse is still abuse. And every one of us probably knows this, that words can stick, words can hurt, words can scar for life. I can remember vividly some of the things that my parents told me or that adults told me when I was very young and impressionable. They are still right here. I can tell you what they were. I can tell you where I was. I can tell you what happened. I can vividly recall all of that. Why is that? Well, because of what I just said. Those words can do a lot of damage. And it can take an awful lot to get over those words once they are enforced impress upon those children. Just think about that as well. What we say and the manner in which we say it can either be good or very painful and harmful to our kids. I have to say something about corporal punishment. Corporal means bodily. So we're talking about really, you know, some kind of bodily punishment here. Some parents do not believe in any form of physical discipline. They think it is upsetting and harmful. The argument is basically the parent claims to love you and yet they hit you. You know, what's loving in that? But that entirely misrepresents the argument. There's a big, big difference between hitting a child and training that child through corporal discipline. Hitting a child is not in the same context as an age-appropriate punishment for disobedience. So I think the key word there is hitting. And then people take that word, hitting, and then they say, well, I would never hit my child, and basically, therefore, I would never punish my child in that way. When seeking biblical instruction, traditionally people go to Proverbs. Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Proverbs 22:15. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. You shall strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol, which is the Hebrew word for the grave, the underworld. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Proverbs 29:15. We could cite those things. Such practices and terminology sounds brutish and excessive and abusive to us today because we've all been indoctrinated by political correctness. And yet you cannot allow a godless world and its godless biases and misunderstandings to intimidate us. Your children need to know how to fear God. And the beginning of that fearing God is to fear you as a parent in a very healthy way. I don't mean fear you like, you know, when you come near them that they're shying away from you expecting to be hit. That's the wrong thing. But they do need to respect your authority. And when it is necessary, you need to remind them of that respect and your authority, okay? Some Christians might think that spanking or the rod is the only godly form of punishment, but this is really referring to principle, not to the method itself. Otherwise, we'd be in sin if we didn't spank our children with a rod, right? So some young children respond well to spanking. Others respond well to a timeout, to, you know, maybe soap in the mouth, bar of soap. I recommend lava. By experience, or by losing privileges. That might be something as well. I know when our kids were younger, you know, we did not have to, all we had to do with Larissa was just pick up the spanking stick, which all it was is a Home Depot paint stirring stick. And they're nice because they're flexible. They don't hurt, but they sting. Okay. All we had to do is just reach for that. Larissa, you know, cry, tears. Logan was like, bring it on, you know. He didn't care. I mean, you'd spank him. He'd just stand there defiantly like, okay, now what? You know, and we go through that. Guess what we found to break Logan? Which is putting him in the corner. He hated that. He just hated that. And yet that's what worked. So you're going to have to experiment. And by the way, as you experiment, it's likely to change over time too. That's okay. This is your job as a parent to find out what works best. And to, you know, here's where some advice from other families might be very helpful to you. You use what works best, but don't spoil the child by doing nothing when he deserves something. Make sure that you get his attention or her attention and let them know who is in charge. Not because you're a bully or anything else, because you're a parent. They need to know that. Here's what always works when administering any form of teaching and punishment. First of all, consider the child himself or herself. The object here is to break bad habits, not the child's spirit and never his skin or bones. Break bad habits. That's what you're after. Reject bad behavior, not the child himself or herself. In other words, say you did a bad thing as opposed to saying you are a bad boy or a lousy child. Those are two very different things there. Okay, one focuses on what happened. This thing happened. It's wrong. We need to correct that. The other thing focuses on the child and says, you're kind of a worthless child. And when children hear that in so many words, that gets into their head and they start processing that. And that tape runs over and over and over. And then when they grow up, guess what they keep thinking? I'm a worthless person. I'm a worthless person. My parents always told me I was a worthless person. So that can be very damaging, and you're not trying to damage your child. You're trying to redirect your child. So describe the problem. This is what you did, rather than evaluate the child. You never mind me, or you are such a disappointment to me. Think about what you're saying. Say it correctly. Take time to think about that ahead of time. Let the discipline be equal to the nature of the problem itself. In other words, let the punishment fit the crime. Taking a belt to a toddler for talking back to his parents is a bit too much, don't you think? Okay. And yet a verbal no-no to 12-year-old Jimmy who just shot his neighbor's cat is probably too little. Okay. So I'm just giving you two extremes here. Let the punishment fit the crime as much as possible. Use common sense. Be fair. Be equal. What would other children receive that did the same offense? What would your other kids have done or received from you, I should say, when they were that age and now Jimmy's not quite that age? You know, make that proportional to their age there as well. And then thirdly here, containment. Contain the discipline to the time in which it is given. Time taken for discipline should be just for that, nothing else. In other words, it's confusing if you mix up other things to your discipline time. For example, a parent takes little Jimmy to the room to spank him, but along the way, dad's sitting there joking with him and cutting up with him, and the child's confused. It's like, am I getting punished, or is this, are we having a bonding moment here? You know, what exactly is going on here? That's not good. I know in another congregation I was in, there was a woman who would take her child to the cry room for for a useless swat, basically. The kid didn't even care because she didn't know what she was doing. And then would give the kids food and toys, and the message is confusing. So the kid thought, oh, so if I act up in services, I get treats. Guess what the kid's going to do? Guess what the kid did? Not surprising. Parent trained the kid to do that. So what are you training your kids to do? Keep the message very clear. Do not give mixed signals. And allow for that the time for that discipline to occur, and then make it clear, all right, it's over, all done, I love you, right? And let's move on. We did what we had to do. Let's move on to whatever else we need to do here, okay? And that's all under the guise of containment. Most of all, consistency. 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 Think about train sound. Consistency, 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 because that is so important. Lack of consistency is extremely unfair to the child. Once again, you are sending confusing and mixed signals. It is hard, I know, when the parent is, or both parents are tired or busy, or there's company over, etc. I understand those things are happening, but it's difficult, it will be difficult, to take time to teach that or to reprimand the child in every case. But sometimes what happens is parents get soft. They let their children get away with something that they paddled them for earlier. And what is the message? I did the exact same thing last week, and I got all this trouble. I did it this week, and it's like, hey, don't do that again. I'm busy. You know, I mean, it's just what has happened there. There's a breakdown in the law and order, breakdown in the boundaries there. And sometimes parents are divided because mom will do that, and then dad said that over here. There's no real standard, no real stability, no defined law and order. Let me just say it once again. I said it last week. Children quickly learn how to manipulate their parents, whether they even realize it or not. They will play you, and they will play you against each other. They will take full advantage of the weaker parents. And this happens when dad is trying to punish, and then mom steps in and tries to save the child, right? And if you've ever seen that scenario, you know how frustrating that can be for the father, and how that will break down the process that is going on there. Or when mom's trying to discipline the child and the dad's in the background rolling his eyes and laughing like, oh, whatever, just listen to your mom, you know, that sort of thing. What just happened there? Here you've got mom or dad trying to do the right thing, and the other one's running in there and undercutting them. And that's just not very effective. The kids pick up on that, by the way, and they know what to do with it. Parents, get together and talk. Figure out how to teach your kids, how to encourage your kids, how to correct your kids, yes, even how to punish your kids together for their best interests. Obedience thrives on consistency. Everyone knows what is expected, and everyone knows what will happen if it is not done. That's consistency. The wrong must always be wrong. You can't laugh when your kids swear or talk back or steal or sin. You can't laugh and joke about that because that sends the exact wrong message. So mean what you say and say what you mean. If you do that again, I'll, you know, every parent has probably said that and every child's probably heard that. And some parents actually meant it and other parents probably didn't mean it at all. If you've ever been in a store where some kid's acting up and you hear, Jimmy, put that down. Jimmy, can you please put that down? Jimmy, can you put that down? Jimmy, can you please not touch that? Jimmy, can you please not, let's not do that, Jimmy. It's exasperating. You want to go out and spank the parent, right? Because this is not working. And the kid knows it. The kid, he's like, whatever. You know, he doesn't care what mom's saying because mom carries no authority because she's trained him that way. So if you're going to say, do that again and I'll fill in the blank, well then, when that happens again, you had better fill in the blank. You better do that, or don't say it at all. Follow through, or don't promise at all. Children figure out very early when you are all talk, and they will play you. And such parents will sometimes say, oh, I just don't know what to do. Oh, Jimmy won't listen to me. Well, listen, you are smarter, you are stronger, you are more experienced than Jimmy. You are expected to teach him to listen. In such cases, I will propose to you, it is not a cannot scenario, it is a will not scenario. What you're really saying is, I will not do what is necessary to get Jimmy to listen to me. I just don't want to go there. That's what you're really saying. But you're turning it into, I don't know what to do. I can't do this. When in fact, you can. Now, when Jimmy is 15 or 25 or 35, well, then it's going to be a cannot. But it's because you've trained him that way. You can train a child for good or for evil. Children will be taught, first of all, by their parents. This whole thing on obedience and discipline is an enormous subject with so much to say, but the overall thing we're after here is to improve and benefit and save the child. The motive has to be love, not just mere control, not just anger or embarrassment or frustration or peer pressure, not just even sermons like you're hearing right now. That's not a motive in itself, but it requires love for the kid. Act in that child's best interest. And that requires parents to be more than just a buddy or a friend or a playmate. I understand there's times when we're all buddies with our kids, that's fine, but there also is a time when you have to step out of that role and be a parent, and your kids need to know the difference. I can say one thing, and Larissa will back this up since she's here. My kids knew when I was joking around, and they also knew when I was serious, and they know it to this day, okay? Because we like to cut up, right? And we do all the time. But when I'm saying something serious, I expect to be listened to, and I expect her to respect that. And that's how it's always been. And that's a good thing. It's a healthy thing for her, for Logan, as well as for my wife and I. So you can never be the buddy at the expense of being a parent. You have a God-given responsibility to guide your children into adulthood. That requires a lot of effort, but of course it may last a lifetime because a well-disciplined child can easily turn into a responsible, mature adult and hopefully a faithful Christian. I like this quote. I think I have it up here. It's in your notes, from Frederick Douglass. He says, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. Think about that. What a lot of power behind that statement. Easier to build strong children than to repair broken people, really. This is a challenging and yet very rewarding task. You must engage it daily, realistically, and prayerfully. And on that note, I just want to say I commend all those parents who are trying very hard to be parents. I'm not looking for perfection. Don't look for it in me either. But we are striving, I hope, to be good parents for our kids, trying to uphold all the things that we're talking about right here. My hat off to you, and keep doing what you're doing, if indeed you're doing it rightly, doing it the way God wants you to. That's our lesson for today. We'll continue our series next Sunday morning. If there's anyone here, we've been talking about, really, responsibility to God all this lesson. And if there's anyone here who wants to follow through with that responsibility to God and become a Christian, be baptized into Christ, this would be your opportunity to do so as we stand and sing the song that Richard has selected for us.